Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper. Today I'm sitting on the banks of the beautiful Merrimack River, just upstream a few miles from Onondaga Cave State Park. I got on the river right at daylight this morning. There was almost a full moon and a beautiful, beautiful morning. It's a little bit cooler. We have been having 9,500 degree weather and extremely hot, even out on the rivers and streams. So I waited and it cooled up a little bit. Plus the rivers have been flooded quite a bit. They've been up and down like a yo-yo this summer, and it's been a little difficult to get out on the river. So I've been watching them, and the Merrimack's dropped. It's actually dropping fast now. I'm surprised how low it was this morning, but it's plenty high enough to run with a jet boat around the Onondaga Cave State Park area. But I ran up river about 5 miles, about 3 miles up. The Hoosaw comes into the Merrimack, and I went a couple miles past there into some waters I hadn't been in before. And the water was a little skinny in a few spots there. Drug a little bit of gravel, but not bad. I made it. Had a great time. But I was on the river out hoping to catch some smallmouth this morning, but the bite started out pretty slow, and I didn't catch too much right off the bat, but I stuck with it and managed to pick up some smallmouth and largemouth both. I actually caught more largemouth today than I did smallmouth, which is kind of unusual, particularly on any Ozark stream. But gosh, it was the only jet boat out there, and it was 2 or 3 hours before I started seeing a few floaters, and they were in kayaks and canoes and some folks in tubes, all having a great time. But I had a great time as well. The fishing did start to pick up about 11 o'clock, but I caught my first fish on a rage crawl, about a 3-4 inch crawl, bright orange. And I've had good luck on the Merrimack River with orange baits, whether it be crawls or creature baits or plastic worms or whatever, but orange is a good color, particularly if it looks like a crawdad. A lot of crayfish in this river, but I fished that Texas rig style. Just put a 1/4 ounce weight on it, drifted it around the rocks and logs, and of course around the woods where I picked up the largemouth. Smallmouth were in the rocks with a little bit of current. Fished along some steep banks, along some bluff lines, and had a pretty good time, but just didn't knock them out like I would have liked to. But also fished a big bite bait, a trick stick worm. And my favorite color of those that I've had the most success with is black with a blue fleck in them, or flake. And I don't use a weight usually. I just use a big 5-aught hook, gives it a little bit of weight. And when I cast that to the bank around rocks, the worm just slowly drifts towards the bottom. It weaves kind of back and forth, and if you barely twitch that rod tip, it'll add just a little bit more movement to it, and usually will elicit a strike. So I had some good success on big bite baits this morning. And if I could only have one bait or lure that I could take out on the river with me, most any Ozark stream, whether smallmouth bass, it would be the fluke made by Zoom. And I prefer pearl white, but I love those baits in the summertime when fish are a bit more active, their metabolism is higher, they're feeding more, and I can catch smallmouth bass, sometimes largemouth bass as well, on those Zoom flukes, regardless of what area of the water column the fish are in. Because I can catch fish on top when I take just a light wire hook, run it through that fluke, you know, through the nose, twist it up through the belly and through the back, and then tuck that point in, and you can fish that kind of like you're walking the dog with a spook. And you have to keep the bait moving because it will sink slowly. But if you want to keep it on top, keep your rod tip up, keep it moving, and you're going to catch fish on top when they're feeding on top. Now, the fish are a little bit lower in the water column, say just a few inches down. You can slow that retrieve down and let that zoom fluke. As it sinks, it's just going to zigzag back and forth just like a dying bait fish. And sometimes that's just more than smallmouth and largemouth both can withstand. They're going to strike that thing, and I've caught lots of them on that. Now, if the fish are even deeper, I sometimes go to a heavier hook and get it down in the middle of the water column. And again, you can retrieve that very slowly and just give it a little jig once in a while, and it's going to dart back and forth just like a dying shad is what they really look like. So fish will come along and pick those up, and sometimes the strikes are just violent. But they can be a little hard to hook sometimes, so you got to get a good hook set, get that hook out of the back of that bait and up into the fish's mouth. So you got to be a little bit aggressive with that hook set. And I've actually caught bass on the bottom of rivers too, fishing a fluke. In that case, I let it sink all the way to the bottom. Or if there's a little bit of current, put even a 16th ounce weight in front of it, and it'll get it all the way down to the bottom. Now, that thing's sitting on the bottom, it's going to move with the current just a little bit, or you can jig it just a little bit. And again, smallmouth, I think that thing is a big, usually you can get them different sizes, 4 to 6 inches, I think. I prefer the 5-inch most of the time, but it works like a charm for me. But not only do those big smallmouth and largemouth think that that zoom fluke in a pearl color is a minnow of some type that's wounded or dying, but I think at times they often think that they're actually molting crayfish as well, because when crayfish are molting, they're kind of a creamy white color, so the bass sometimes might mistake them for those as well. But anyway, today I caught bass on a variety of baits. The worms, the crawls, the flukes, had a good time out there. Didn't catch a lot of fish, didn't catch many fish of any size, but certainly had a good time. But here in the heat of the summer, the fish, they acting just a little bit differently. I was hoping to get on a topwater bite right at daylight, but just didn't happen. The bite was pretty slow and really didn't pick up till about 10 or 10:30. And a lot of the bass fishing guides on Ozark streams have been telling me that's been the case during the hot weather. The fishing activity really doesn't pick up till about mid-morning. They're catching a lot of fish in the riffles. That makes sense. There's a little bit more oxygen there, and the fish are chasing minnows and crawdads out in the riffles. But I caught more mine this morning on in some of the little bit different deeper pools right off the riffles. And on the fluke, I caught them up in the water willows at the edge of the river, or some places I floated by some little islands. The water willows stand at the edge of the bank and out into the water. And I had one bass threw a fluke up, and it kind of hung up in the top of the water willows, maybe, I don't know, a foot above the water. And I jiggled a little bit, and it kind of slid down a twig and hovered about 2 or 3 inches above the water, and there was one smallmouth that come out of the water 3 different times to get that bait and pluck it out of the weeds. But he was finally successful and pulled it out, and that was something to watch. Of course, we're always excited when bass are coming to the top of the water, splashing around, making some noise, and it just fires us up and makes us want to catch them that much more. But enjoyable day out on the river. But I ran further upriver than I normally do. I put in an Onondaga, and I usually run about 3 miles up before the Hoosaw runs in, but I went past that today and was kind of shocked. The river's been pretty high and murky, but it's dropped quickly, and it's getting back down close to normal summer level. And I hadn't been on that part of the river in a while, and you know that every time the flood comes, well, the river changes quite a bit. And I was shocked to see come around some corners, and wow, a lot of gravel actually slid across 3 gravel spots that were pretty shallow. The bottom of the boat was raking a little bit, motor raked a little bit, of course picked up a little bit of gravel in my grates. Finally had to stop and clean those out before it could come back down. But saw some beautiful, beautiful country up in there above the Hoosaw towards Steelville. some good looking habitat in there, picked up a couple of fish. Just wasn't an on fire day, but still a lot of fun. But I slowly drifted back down, and I was coming up on a shallow riffle, and I had kind of wanted to start my motor to run through that, but I heard another boat coming, so I just held up and was going to wait for them to come through, but they pulled over before they got the riffle. I drifted on down, and it was a young highway patrolman, water patrol. You know, we used to have just a water patrol agency, but a number of years ago, they transferred over to the highway patrol. This young man was very excited to be out on the river, but he'd stopped to cleat the gravel out of his grates on his motor as well, his jet unit. But he had come down to Hoosaw. He'd been up a little ways, just, I don't know, gosh, a mile or so up the Hoosaw from the Merrimack. There's a new channel that cut through there with some of the latest floods. And back earlier, you could float through that and probably could still get through with a kayak. But this young highway patrolman said that he couldn't not get through there now with a jet boat. It was just too low. So that won't be used any by jet boats for the rest of the summer or until next flood. Floods have been a regular thing this year. The Merrimack River and a lot of the others have been up and down like a yo-yo, and it's been pretty difficult to get on them when I wanted to. But the guys, the tournament fishermen, Corey Cottrell, Jeff Schultz, some of those guys are still catching a lot of good quality smallmouth and largemouth both on both the Gasconade and the Merrimack River. Now, those guys win a lot of tournaments. Hey, if you can't spy on them, you'll learn a great deal from those guys if you can hang out with them just a little bit. But great fishing, great activity out there. By 11 o'clock, there were a good number of kayakers and canoeists coming down the Merrimack, so I didn't even start my big motor back up, just drifting along, used my trolling motor to get me through even some of the swift, narrow spots. Trolling motor did a good job of getting me through. Also, some belly boaters come down, float tubers, and I saw three ladies. I had pulled over on the gravel bar to have some lunch and write a few notes, and three ladies come by the raft. They looked pretty weary, pretty worn. They won't know how much further they had to go. It was about a mile and a half yet, and they wasn't too happy about that fact. But that just brings up a good point, you know. Hey, try to be as prepared as you can before you get out on those dark streams and attempt to float those streams, because you might be biting off more than you really wanted to chew. Make sure that you can handle the craft that you take, whether it's a canoe or a kayak or, in this case, a raft. Be prepared to spend the time and effort that it takes to complete your float trip. There's nothing that outfitters like less than having to get out and run up and down the river and look for somebody that's running late. So talk to experienced people. Quiz the outfitters. These guys, most of them in this part of the world, have been in the business for decades, and they can tell you pretty much exactly how much time it's going to take you to get from point A to point B. So lean on them a little bit, especially if you're renting equipment from them, the kayaks and the canoes and the rafts and that sort of thing. They will help you out. Another interesting point, while I was talking to the highway patrolman, I asked him what he was doing on the river, you know, on a weekday, and he said, well, he'd had lots of complaints on the Merrimack and the Gasconade both about jet boaters running too fast close to kayaks. Well, I'm a jet boater and a kayaker both, so I understand both sides of the story, but a little bit of respect will go a long ways on the river to keep the conflicts down. So jet boaters, of course, we know that you've got to get up on plane, but if you're in a long pool and you got a bunch of kayaks coming down, slow it down or stop and let them get by. Kayakers, on the other hand, if you hear a jet boat coming and you're approaching a riffle or a shallow spot, try to, stop, get out of the way, because those guys have to go up or down those riffles at top speed, because if they slow down, they're going to suck all that gravel up into their engine, into their jet foot, and they can do damage there, could even damage the bottom of their boat. And you know what, even if a jet boat runs by you at full speed in a kayak, I see them coming, I wave them on, because I know they don't want or don't need to slow down. So just wave them on by. Yeah, you're going to get a few big waves, but if you'll just turn that kayak into the waves, you're going to ride right over them. I just don't see the point of people fussing about the jet boats too much, unless, if they're being dangerous and getting too close to you or your kids or that sort of thing, yeah, that can be of a concern. But everybody needs to use a bit of common sense, use a lot of courtesy, and everybody can have a good time and get along on our Ozark rivers. So do your part. Hey, pick up some trash along the way, too. Help keep our rivers beautiful. We're very fortunate here in the Missouri and Arkansas Ozarks to have many clear water, spring-fed streams that we're able to enjoy. And let's keep them clean. It's always kind of irritating, you know, when I see spots that are trashed where people stop and build a little campfire, camp out overnight in some cases, and leave their trash. You know, you carried it in. It's not difficult to carry it out. While you're at it, pick up somebody else's trash as well. It's just not hard to do. Well, I need to get on down the river. Got to finish up my trip. Get home, you know, honeydews to do. But get out the outdoors. Enjoy our streams. Catch some fish. Have a fish fry. Boy, we're fortunate here in the state of Missouri to have the natural resources that we have. Got some great agencies that take care of them, including the Missouri Department of Conservation, the Department of Natural Resources, State Park, Corps of Engineers, National Park Service. We're extremely fortunate here. Don't forget it when you're outdoors. I'll be right back. I'm Bill Cooper.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browls the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the Northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper. Hope you enjoyed that first half of the program. I certainly enjoyed recording it. I did that right out on the Merrimack River, close to Onondaga Cave State Park, just a few miles upriver. Stopped on a beautiful, beautiful gravel bar. Lots of them on the Merrimack. Hey, I'm going to go back to that place and camp one of these days. But I sat there and ate my lunch and watched the floaters go by and recorded the first half of this podcast. And lots of things going on in the Missouri outdoors right now. Of course, it's middle summertime. I always talk about the fair weather fishermen. A lot of people fish only in the summertime. And I actually prefer to fish the rivers in the cooler weather. Fewer people out there. And I think fish are easier to catch as well. But that's just my opinion. But lots of things going on. One of the exciting things coming up before too long, going to be in October, is a bear season. We actually have a bear season in Missouri. Hasn't been around for very long. But I got drawn last year, and I tell you, it's a great deal of fun just to attempt to bear hunt. It's a little difficult in Missouri unless you really got a bear pinpointed, because there's no baiting allowed in Missouri, and you can't use dogs either like they do in a lot of parts of the country. But You know, we've got, I guess, a few hundred bears in the state of Missouri, and not a lot of tags handed out. There's half a dozen or so bears killed each season. But we're divided up into three zones all south of the Missouri River, and I was in zone, I think it was one last year, was southwest Missouri, and went down to Devil's Backbone Outfitter. A friend of mine, Joe and Chance Hollingshed, have a couple thousand acres down there that they've managed for, wow, several decades for deer and wild turkey. Of course, they're on that White River drainage, and a lot of bears tend to come up in that part of the country out of Arkansas, and that's where our bears came from. Back in the 50s, I think it was, Arkansas had a state bear stocking program to replenish black bears in that part of the region. Well, they started migrating north, and so we're the benefactor of that program. And it's usually young males that travel and heading out looking for their own territories. But I've actually seen bears in the state of Missouri. You don't see them often, but it's sure a thrill when you do. But anyway, we got a season coming up from October 17th to 30th. And if you applied for a deer tag, you would have already been notified whether you were successful or not. I got a no once again, but of course I did draw a tag last year and spent a week hunting. And the farm I hunted on, they had had four bears on that farm for months and had a lot of trail cam photos of them. But right before I went down, a couple weeks before I went down, acorns dropped, and boy, the bears just disappeared. They like acorns almost as much as deer. And we hunted that farm for a week. Another gentleman hunted it and walked about 40 miles that week and didn't find any fresh bear sign, and they just disappeared off the cameras too. So they had moved on, found a better acorns and a better spot, I suppose. But October 17th to 30th, we'll have a Missouri bear season. And, well, now those dates are good unless they meet the quota. Bear hunters actually have to call in early every morning prior to going hunting just to make sure that the quota has not been met. Because once that quota is met, the director of the Department of Conservation will shut that season down, and he can do that if the quota reaches 80%. He can actually shut the season down, and he would do that, I assume, because maybe too many bears came from one spot. That's just a guess. But shooting hours are a half hour before sunrise until a half hour after sunset. But that phone number that you need to call every morning is 800-668-4045, and got to do that daily, and be sure and do that. It'd be kind of bad news to harvest a bear and then get a ticket and get it taken away from you because you forgot to call and the quota had ended and the season had ended. But three zones, and only bears may be harvested, lone bears, that is. In other words, a bear's got to be by himself for you to harvest it. If there's a group of bears, you're not supposed to kill one. If there's a bear, a sow, and young ones, certainly you're not supposed to kill the sow. But a bear by itself, either sex, is legal. And, you know, the cost is very minimal. All of us that apply pay a $10 application fee. But if you actually draw a tag, then it costs you another $25. Where can you bear hunt for $35? But that application process took place back in May, and then people were notified, I think, in June or July. But no dogs or no baiting. And what do you do for bear if you get one? Well, I can tell you they are superb eating. I've killed bears in Canada, and I love to bring them home, and I like about an 8-pound roast, and I put a rub on it, inject apple juice in it, and let it sit overnight, and then wrap it completely in bacon and put it on a smoker for about 8 to 10 hours. Creates a real good crust over it, and slice through that crust and get into the meat cooked that length of time. It's about a medium rare, and it's as good as any fine roast beef I've ever eaten. So bear is great table fare. And if you want to get a rug made or, you know, full body mount, whatever, there are, you'd be surprised how many taxidermists in the state of Missouri do have experience in mounting bears. But Scenic River Taxidermy out of Salem, Missouri. They have some bears on displays. You could go down there and take a look. They'd be glad to talk to you, show you around. And I had them work on a bear rug that I had. One time they put trim around it and just did an excellent, excellent job. If you're a bear hunter, good luck. If you don't want to meet, call me. I'll take care of it. Elk season also, the draw results came out July the 1st. And once again, I got a big goose egg, so no elk hunting. But it's a very limited season. They only give out 5 or 6 tags a year, and I think this year it's only going to be 5 antlered permits, 5 for the whole state. Several thousand people applied, and one of those 5 will be a landowner tag. But the archery season for elk is October 17th to the 25th, and then there's a firearm season, the December 12th to the 20th. And you can hunt a half hour before sunrise and a half hour after, I guess it is. And there's only 3 counties that are open. That's Carter, Reynolds, and Shannon County, right down close to the Peck Ranch area. Check the regulation at Peck Ranch if you're going to hunt there, because I know the refuge part of it is closed. Rest of it's probably open. But always check your area regulations. But those are a couple of exciting seasons that are coming up, both of them fairly new in the state of Missouri. Bear and elk seasons. I apply every year. I've been drawn once. That's not bad odds, but sure would like to get a Missouri elk. I'll keep working on that. But seasons that are open now, squirrel seasons. And as Brad Harris says, man, if you want to be a good hunter, start out squirrel hunting. That's how all of us started when we were kids. And hopefully we get a lot of kids started today, but don't see as many of them squirrel hunting as they used to. It was great fun to grab a .22 and head to the woods. And now it's not a bad time to be out in the woods squirrel hunting, because they've been cutting on hickory nuts for a couple of weeks now. And daily limit is 10 with a possession limit of 20. And squirrel season opened back in May the 23rd. That's usually on a holiday weekend. Black bass season starts at the same time. But that squirrel season runs up to February of 2027, so that's a very long season. If you get the itch to get in the outdoors, want to put a little meat in the freezer, squirrel hunting is the way to go. And, well, there's nothing better than squirrel and dumplings. And, of course, good old fried squirrel, particularly if you've got a young squirrel, extremely good. Squirrel meat's got a distinct flavor to it, not like anything else that I know, and it's very good, and I actually like it better than rabbit meat. But hey, if you're going to have fried squirrel and biscuits and gravy and fried potatoes, give me a call. I'd be glad to join you. We'd have some great conversations. Another season coming up September 1st, one of my favorite dove seasons. It runs through November 29th with a limit of 15, possession limit of 45. You can hunt from a half hour before sunrise all the way to sunset. You'll need a small game permit and a migratory bird card. You'll also need the same for dove season. So get that migratory migratory bird card. And a Boot Hill friend of mine, Rex Burney, has told me there's lots of birds down in the Boot Hill. That was in August, and hopefully they're still there by September 1. Rex gave me an invite to come down and hunt with those guys. I know they always have a good place to hunt, and I hope it happens. Hope I get to go down. But no lead on all the MDC special management areas or dove hunting spots or plots that they plant, the plus 37 other designated wetland areas. Again, always check your regulations, and you can do that online. Don't carry lead into those areas, because you will get a ticket. But there's lots of good shot shells available out there anymore. And I like, if you're going to get doves, loads, a lot of people get the cheapest they can get with 7/8 ounce shot. You're a lot better off to go with a 1 ounce shot, just a little bit heavier shot, and I do anyway, seem to knock down more doves. And of course, you know, there's a lot of debate about how many shells it takes to knock down a dove. Many years ago, the average used to be about 5 shots to knock down one bird. Now, I've had times when it took me a lot more. I've had times when it took me a lot less. That's the times I like to talk about. But dove recipe, doves are also good table fare. A lot of people don't like them because they're a very red meat, and all strong flying birds are a dark red meat, just like your ducks. But the doves, oh, there's nothing more fun than having a dove shoot and having a big dove fry after. Most of the guys just take the breast out of them, you know, marinate them a little bit. Some people like to marinate them in just Italian dressing for a while. Wrap a piece of bacon around them, throw them on a hot grill, and again, just cook them about the medium rare. And boy, it's a tasty, tasty treat. I've seen guys, too, put a jalapeno pepper in that cavity between the breasts, wrap it in bacon. That's pretty cool. And I've seen some other little recipes that guys come up with. It's amazing. Outdoorsmen are great, great cooks. But hey, if you can get into even a commercial hunt, pay $100 or more to get to shoot for the day, and you meet a lot of great people and good friends. And off of some of those hunts, I've got some other invites at times that makes it well worth the trip. But dove season, get out there with a bunch of guys and have a good time. Teal season comes along shortly after. That runs September 12th to the 20th, and you will need that migratory bird card plus a federal duck stamp, and you can pick those up at the post office. Seems like an odd place to buy them. Like one buddy of mine, I think they're like $25 now, and he kind of frowned at that cost last year, and he asked him if he can mail something with a stamp after he's a few duck hunting with it. Don't work that way. But it is for a great cause, for wetland conservation. But on a teal, the limit is 6. Now, that includes, you know, your blue-winged teal, your green-winged teal, and your cinnamon teal. I've never seen a cinnamon teal in my part of the world, but most of them are blue-winged teal. They're early migrators, start coming through Missouri in about middle August, and you'll see them building up at the waterfowl areas, some of your favorite hunting spots, ponds, lakes, that sort of thing. But they're fast flyers. They fly in tight wads. And because they are the only duck that's in season, they're in early September, the hours are from sunrise to sunset. In regular duck season, you can shoot 30 minutes before sunrise. But the late start on teal is because they're the only duck in season, and they want to make sure you got the best opportunity to identify that duck before you pull the trigger, because there could be some other local ducks or some early migrators that drift through, and you don't want to make a mistake. But teal are wonderful for children. If you're taking young shooters, take them during teal season and get them started, because teal have a habit, if they see decoys, a lot of times they'll just drop right down in them. And if I got young shooters in the boat, I let the teal decoy, let them get set down, and then flush them up. That gives the kids a straightaway shot. Otherwise, you might be shooting at them as they're going across the decoys at 60 miles an hour. You got to shoot into tomorrow to get those ducks. But again, no lead. And use that steel shot or other shots available. I'd like to suggest you check out Migra, M-I-G-R-A, ammo. But boy, they make some great products and have some stack loads that are really effective on other critters like turkeys and geese and big ducks. But recipes, teal are one of the best eating ducks out there. I love them. I like to take the little guys. They only weigh about 4 to 6 ounces. And I skin them. A lot of people like to pluck them. But I like to cook them with a pretty strong sage dressing. Extremely, extremely good. All right, one of the seasons that's really being looked forward to is our archery deer season coming up September 15th. Runs to November 13th and November 15th to January 15th. We're allowed 2 deer of either sex, but only 1 antlered deer before November 14th. Remember, only one. You got to have your archer's hunting permit. If you're turkey hunting, that's a different permit anymore. You have to buy a special permit to turkey hunt. So, out-of-state hunters, kind of some bad news for those guys. They'll only be allowed 1 antlered deer. And they got to have that non-resident permit. The cost has gone up to $360. Been a lot of yelling about that. But Missouri's finally kind of come in line with what other states charge us. So I mean, I like to see out-of-state hunters come in, but, you know, they should pay what we have to pay when we go out. But out-of-state youth hunters, 6 to 15, the cost is only $11. And if you want an antlerless tag to kill a, you know, doe or I guess a button buck would be legal, it's only $34 for that antlerless tag, but you must buy that $360 tag first. You're not going to come from out of state and come to Missouri and just buy antlerless tags for $34. And there's a non-resident landowner tag as well for $225. But for the rifle season, I know up north, Missouri, you know, where the big bucks grow, there's been lots of complaints about being so many out-of-state hunters there. So that increased cost will probably decrease the number of out-of-state hunters coming into that part of the world, but we'll see what happens. The firearms deer season, the early portion for the youth season, starts October 24th and runs through the 25th. The late youth season, November 27th through the 29th. The November regular firearm season, that's when the Orange Army comes out, runs from November 14th to the 24th. There's an antlerless season from October 9th through the 11th, and again, December 5th through the 13th. Alternative methods, December 26th to January 5th. And you kill one antlered buck, two total for the deer season, and that includes archery and gun bow. So keep that in mind. I'd like to suggest to you, too, I write for DeerCast. Used to be owned by the Drury Brothers, now GSM Outdoors. But DeerCast is a phone app that you can use. You'll have maps for the area that you're hunting in, all kinds of tools there that you can use. You can check crops. You can check, see how much timber there is, water sources, on and on and on. Plus, I guess every video that Drury's ever filmed is on that app, as well as weather information. You can even check there if you make a shot on a deer, you can check, look at the chart, see where you shot it. It'll even make a suggestion about how long you should wait before you go look to that for that deer. But DeerCast, a great app that you can get right on your phone. Besides that, you can read my articles. Be sure and do that. It won't help my paycheck, but maybe you'll enjoy the articles. Hey, I hope you're having a great time in the outdoors. Get out in the Missouri outdoors and enjoy all the great things that we have in here in the state. And again, about deer season, you know, been lots of talk and rabble-rousing going on about the CWD problem, but still, we got lots of deer in the state of Missouri, and still killing around 300,000 a year, give or take a few. And so that's good deer numbers anywhere. But you've got the possibility of putting several deer in your freezer, and with the price of meat these days, it's still a pretty cheap meal when you're putting whitetail deer in the freezer and having red meat throughout the winter. Hey, I've always, you know, for the last, gosh, many decades, have enjoyed the outdoors here in the state of Missouri. Been at it for a long time, 77 now, and still going strong in the outdoors. But I encourage you to get into the outdoors. I'm living my outdoor dreams. I hope you will, too. I'm Bill Cooper.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you, you could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Boat Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.